G'day and welcome to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. My name is Chris Hayton and this is part two of the beer distribution segment. In this episode, I sit down with Group Quality and Sustainability Manager of the Endeavour Drinks Group, Dermot O'Morta. Most of you will know that the Endeavour Drinks Group is one of the largest beverage retailer and distributors in Australia, with well-known bottle shops such as Dan Murphy's and BWS and the giant pubs and clubs network of the ALH Group. Dermot and his team, to use his own words, are the ones that keep the river clean from being polluted when it comes to the many different beverage producers wanting to sell their products within their retail distribution channels. In our chat, we talk about the potential opportunities for small local breweries if they have ambitions to get their beers into local BWS bottle shops, the common pitfalls and issues they come across with suppliers just starting out in wholesale distribution, and some of the bare minimum quality controls a distributor such as Endeavour would expect a brewery to adhere to. So I hope you enjoy it then, my sit-down chat with Dermot O'Morta from the Endeavour Drinks Group. Dermot O'Morta, welcome to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be here.
I was really excited of sitting down with you, actually. Obviously, this episode is going to feature on our beer distribution segment and met with people right across the industry that sort of deal in that distribution space, and obviously Endeavour Drinks being one of the major, I guess, players for bottle shop distribution with your Dan Murphy's and BWS, et cetera. And I'm sure a lot of people listening would be very interested to hear, I guess, your advice and insights on how they've started out. They're starting to get some runs on the board. They're starting to dip their toes into getting their beers out to local bottle shops.
Yep.
There's maybe some opportunities for them to start seeing their beers in your big Dan Murphy shops, BWSs and the like. So really want to get your, I guess, insights, especially from that quality aspect, you being the group quality manager for Endeavour. But just before we get into all that, mate, always want to get to know the guests beforehand,
sure.
Your background before Endeavour, maybe some, I know you get across a lot of different categories in the beverage market, so yep. Wine and spirits, et cetera, but anything related to the craft beer space?
Yeah, I can just give a bit of a, I suppose, summary on my career to date. I studied industrial microbiology, so I'm a trained microbiologist back in Ireland. That was probably around, well, I finished there in 98. 98 went into basically the first brewery I'd ever been into, doing a thesis, like to finish off the degree, and basically got a 4 month placement in industry. That was the first time I had a really good pint of stout,
yeah,
after Guinness. And the brewery was, I think, probably about a year old at that stage, and craft beer was just, it was unheard of. You start talking about the idea of setting up a brewery in Ireland beyond what was already established with the Agio, and everybody would think you were crazy that there was no opportunity there. But these guys came over from Canada and with some Irish partners and set the brewery up in Dublin across the way from Guinness on the other side of the river. So finished the exams, got a call, said, listen, what are you doing? Do you want a job? And went in and ended up spending about 2 years working with Dublin Brewing Company. Left Dublin Brewing Company, went traveling, came to Australia, met my wife, settled down, got a continued brewing. So went down to Five Islands Brewing Company, down in Wollongong.
Yep.
And then from there went in with Lion into Malchovel Brewing there in Camperdown. Then left those guys to work in CUB. So CUB went into spirits, did a couple of years at Botany, then moved up to the brewery at Yatala. Left Yatala, came back to Sydney, worked with Asahi in RTDs and carbonated soft drinks. Left those guys, went into production management with Nestle for about 3 years, and then the role came up in Pinnacle. So, and then at that stage, I've been out of the drinks industry for about 3 years, finished my MBA, and was definitely looking to get back in. So I got a call. There was a quality project role with Woolworths for liquor. So went in, had a chat, and I think the opportunity was, once I arrived, I got the job as quality manager for Pinnacle Drinks. And then Pinnacle Drinks is, it was a pretty young business at that stage, but the business really is it's an internal supplier to Dan's and BWS. So right now Pinnacle's, I suppose, evolved now to a point where it's got four wineries. So it's got Isabel Estate in Marlborough, Chapel Hill in McLaren Vale, Dorian Estate in the Ross Valley, and then Oak Ridge in Yarra. So then it's got all the relationships with the breweries, the distilleries, and other wineries making products. So got in there, looked after the quality end for products there for Pinnacle for about 4 years. And there was an opportunity then. So basically just looked at, you know, from a, goes from a customer perspective, anything on the shelf that was Pinnacle, we were looking after. But what we weren't looking at was then what the customer sees, which is every other product. So a customer doesn't really differentiate who makes the product. They're more looking at the brand and what they like. So the opportunity was basically to widen the scope and just look and make sure all customer comes into a store that, you know, there's kind of three key experiences they're looking for.
Yeah, and I guess a bit of that content there around Endeavour Group. One of my next questions, talking a bit about all the different brands and that features as part of the group. But before we get into that, a couple more fun facts. Favorite beverages. I've always phrased it at people about beer or brewery or style. Yeah. Some people have played Switzerland. But I guess in your situation, you know, you get across a lot of different categories in the beverage market. Yeah. But, yeah, keen to hear what is something that you normally on a Friday afternoon after you finish work, you go to the bottle shop, what is it normally that you take home?
Okay. I think not being Switzerland, but I've kind of my breadth of what I like is quite wide from a beer perspective. I love my IPAs. I love my sours. Belgian styles, I'm pretty into. I do love, you know, kind of experimentals. I love the fruit beers. And then, you know, that's kind of, you know, and more and dark ales, imperial stouts, you name it. Like wine's big, you know, I love Shiraz. And then spirits big into my whiskies and gins.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. I think the from a perspective of breweries, I definitely recognize Garage Projects as one of my favorite breweries.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I had the opportunity with an Institute of Brewing and Distilling conference in Wellington a couple of years back. And rang a friend, said, I'm in Wellington, where should I go? And he says, check out Garage Project. And to be honest, at the time, I wasn't aware of who Garage Project were.
Sorry, how long ago was this?
About 2-3 years ago. Okay. About 3 years ago. So rocked up, nice little spot, the tasting room, and I'm telling you, I think it was about, I went and sampled two paddles and not couldn't fault one beer, and just the styles and how interesting the beers were, one of the most memorable evenings.
Oh, excellent.
I've had.
I really didn't think you were going to pull the trigger on actually naming a brewery. So because I know you covered yourself pretty wide there, all the different categories, and I guess being group quality manager, you've got to do that. You can't play favorites. But, and I've mentioned it before, and some of my favorite breweries, I sort of use the analogy of some of my favorite albums, you know, that I listen to. It's like it's not just one single or a couple songs you like. The whole album is what really sticks out. And there's a couple of breweries that I have or that I know of that are just every beer that they produce, whether it's only 3, 5, or 10, you know, you just know everyone is made with quality. Yes. So, but that's
great. I know there's plenty of Australian ones as well and European breweries too. But I think to recognize one that kind of has, just stands out in my mind as, you know, probably one of the best breweries that I've experienced in the world.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. All right. Well, tell us a bit more about the Endeavour Group. Yeah, you guys frequently feature in media, and I'm sure a lot of people listening know who you guys are. Part of the Woolworths Group, but that's soon to
demerge
in the later in the part of the year. But tell us a bit about Endeavour Group, some of the brands you've mentioned a little bit in your intro there, and also your role as the quality and sustainability manager.
Sure. Okay, it's a very interesting business. The organization as it stands now is BWS, Dan Murphy's Australian Leisure and Hospitality. So we all know BWS and Dan's. ALH is the pubs and hotels arm of the business. Then we've got Cellar Masters, which is wine subscription business online. And then you've got Langton's, which is, you know, your high-end, high-value wines and auction house. And then Pinnacle Drinks, which mentioned is like that supply business for Dan's and BWS. Come, I think, June, July this year, we'll be looking to demerge. So that's a quite an exciting time now. Really, you know, it's a big step in the history of the business to actually now establish itself as a, as its own entity. So, yeah, there's a lot of excitement there within the business and, you know, anticipation. I think COVID, yeah, knocked us back about a year.
Yeah, I was reading that. Yeah. Yep.
So it's kind of, I suppose, blessing in disguise. It means that, you know, I mean, we had more time to prepare. I think the amount of work that we had to do in the last year, it's probably, we'll definitely take it as a blessing. I think, you know, the business has probably got 50% of the retail market. Yeah, we've been a big proponent now in actually driving and supporting the industries that we are connected to. So, you know, I'm very proud to actually work for the business. In my role, I'm the group quality and sustainability manager. So pretty much the deliverable for my job is to ensure a customer walks into a store, picks up a product, has a great experience with the product. From a sustainability perspective, I focus on what's called circular economy. So that's really, you know, if you've got a system and you put something into it, it's how you actually ensure that whatever you've put into it stays within the system for as long and doesn't require more resources to enter the system and then, you know, waste leaving it. So the example is, for me, is the packaging element. So I do a lot of work now with particularly the wine industry through what's called the WISPA, the Wine Industry Sustainable Packaging Alliance. So that's a collective group of wineries, packaging suppliers, government agencies such as, Green Industry South Australia, NGOs like Keep South Australia Beautiful, Australian Packaging Covenant Organisation, and industry bodies like South Australian Wine Industry Association. So basically that collective group works on various projects that actually help lift and, you know, basically brings the industry towards achieving the 2025 national packaging targets. But back to product quality and, you know, I suppose most importantly, beer, this conversation.
Yeah, well, I guess there's also a lot of people listening that, you know, interested in distilling as well. There's a lot of crossover between the two. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So product quality, you know, it's really all around just, you know, customer gets the product, they're happy with it, and it's safe. My focus has always been working with the suppliers, the supply chain, and stores. And if this kind of like three key touch points, if a supplier is making a good product, they pass it into a supply chain looks after it, stores it well, moves it well, then they'll arrive in a store in a good condition, store looks after the product there, you know, rotates it, keeps it in the right temperature, etc., handles it well, then the customer comes in, picks the product off the shelf, it's a good product. So if any of those key touch points fail, then the product moves into the store, i.e., you know, from the supply chain, if it's been mishandled in a damaged state, customer picks it up, then doesn't have a good experience with the product. We work a lot with industry as well. You know, I think from a perspective of how we see it, you know, there needs to be a coherent and, I suppose, unified partnership with the entire industry. So that's, you know, the brewer, the distributor, the wholesaler, shipper, and point of sale staff need to all be on the same page. If everybody's geared towards ensuring, you know, that customer comes in, gets a product, their reputation is there and they're proud of what they do, customer's going to walk away every time and have a great experience. And that's really what, you know, as a retailer, that's, you know, that's our bread and butter. It's the customer. Customer's at the heart of everything we do. And it's that experience with the product that they come to our business for the product. You know, we can give them a really nice place to shop. We can give them really nice people to, you know, help them out and store on the telephone, but that's not the reason they're here. They're here to actually purchase a product. So then we get all that right. But if we fail on the product piece, that's the key element of what we're about.
Well, I guess an area that is not so much in your control, and I guess this is where your department comes in, is essentially making sure that you've got very strict processes on what brands you take on and maintaining those accounts as, you know, delivering on quality and making sure the final package coming into your shops is to Endeavour's standards. So I guess, yeah, that's the area of risk, I guess, that you take with your brand.
We do, but I think, you know, if I look in the suppliers we work with, they're, you know, highly capable. I think, you know, we've got about 20 major suppliers that cover quite a large volume of products for us. Craft beer was, you know, picking up and volumes were ramping up and we were increasing our sale of craft beer products. I think there were a couple of issues, but, you know, these are, yeah. Like the reality is a lot of these brewers were kind of coming in from home brewing into a industrial brewing. Mm. And a lot of these, I suppose, pitfalls that, you know, for young players, yeah, they fell into.
And that's a good lead into my next question. And yeah. Is, I guess, what are some of the common mistakes that you would see with breweries dipping their toes into the wholesale distribution yeah. market, especially on that craft side?
I think some of the key ones really would be, number one would be packaging. So there was a stage where your craft beer would come in a bottle, and that's kind of was the expectation that, you know, if it came in a can, it was a lesser product. But, you know, once cans started getting a foothold in the craft beer market in the US, it, you know, just kind of moved around the globe, and Australia wasn't exempt. So then we started seeing a lot more canned product come into the business. The issue there was just simply seaming. Canning machine isn't like a, you know, a toaster. You stick in your toast, you plug it down, walk away, come back a minute, and you got a piece of toast. You don't stick your can, your beer, feed your cans into your seamer and, you know, fill your cans and just walk away. There's stuff that you need to be aware of, that monitoring and checking to ensure that that product is consistently sealed the way you need it to be.
Yep.
So what we found then, we were getting quite a large number of issues with just leaking cans. So we did a lot of work with the industry on that. So suppliers, we made them aware. We had some really good resources from industry on standards for can seaming. So that's the information we openly shared with the industry and with our suppliers. So if we felt that there was an issue, we'd ensure that, you know, we would work with them to help them fix their issue and kind of highlight to them then some of the gaps. Worked with the IBA, so the Independent Brewers Association, highlighted to them the concerns we had and the issues we were identifying, so then they could get more information out to their members as well. And, you know, touch wood, the number of issues we've seen in that space have dropped considerably. It's pretty much a very unusual day to actually have an issue now where we're seeing leaking cans.
Mm.
I think when it's still, you know, it can still pop up, and generally it's a lot of time it is a new brewer coming onto the scene. So, you know, as much as we've kind of been able to help educate the masses, the newcomers still kind of have that, I suppose, risk of making the same mistake.
So has there been a lot of craft beer brands over the years that you've had to drop from Endeavour's portfolio because of that?
No. I think the risk to the brewer is we can't sell the product. You know, there's no way we're going to say to a customer, like some of these, there's products we sell from a craft beer perspective. You might spend $15 on one can. So yeah. If I'm going to spend $15 of my money for a can, yeah, there's got to be no question as to the quality of the product.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm not doing it just to kind of fingers crossed. I hope she'll be right. No, yeah. It has to be that once they taste that product, they look at it, it's just perfect.
Yeah.
And I think then, you know, if you look at, say, the more mass produced beers, that are, you know, lower price point, these brewers producing these products, they get them down pat. Consistency's there, the quality's there, they've got tight specifications on it. There's never an issue with these guys, and the volume of product that we'd sell in from a volume perspective is much higher in that space, but the value is lower from a point of sale perspective. But the quality is just, we rarely get an issue there. So I think the, you know, when you look at the other way, you're talking a really high value product, yet you can get so many issues. So I think it was critical then that, you know, we helped the industry to actually lift the bar, get brewers educated. And, you know, I think that's kind of been a key driver for me. You know, having come from the industry and, you know, grown up brewing, when I started brewing, I didn't know the first thing about brewing. You know, I went in as a microbiologist. I learned kind of the basics. And even when I arrived in Australia, there was things that around quality control that I had no idea about. I continued to learn about, what I needed to know to make a really good beer. So knowing that, I do get it. So I can talk to brewers around the challenges that I know that they're now facing, particularly the ones that are stepping into it by themselves. And just knowing that support network that's available now and getting them connected with it. I think you look at the industry today and it's just, you know, you've got hundreds of breweries. You've got thousands of people employed in the industry. You've got really good, the Independent Brewers Association, you've got a really good association that's supporting brewers. You've got the Institute of Brewing and Distilling, which is educating. You've got, I think personalities like BB that's just kind of driving quality. Yeah. And it's not just, it's a job. These guys are passionate about it. They love the industry and it's a great industry, great people. To have it, you know, and I think that's what I wanted to get back into it because to be able to say it's the best job and it's the best job I've ever had is right now. Love the people in the industry. I love the people in this business. I wouldn't imagine being anywhere else. So, you know, taking that passion and that love for the industry, I just want to see that newcomers into the industry get that too. And, we help them because, like I said, with the, you know, if we're unified together and we work towards a common goal of ensuring a really good product, customers are going to have a great experience, but the industry benefits. You know, we keep it healthy.
Yeah, perfect. And just to clear up for some of the listeners, that personality you were talking about that's driving quality in the industry, VB, that's Dan McCulloch, VB the brand.
That is.
Von Beer he goes by. But
yes.
Yeah, perfect. Well, and I guess leading into what Endeavour looks for when it comes to taking on new beer brands or new beverage brands. What are some of those things that I guess I'm sure there's things on your radar, like either you've got beer brands knocking on your door or, you know, you approach them because there's a lot of, you know, customer demand or trend going there. How do you guys approach bringing on new brands?
Like at this stage now, it's kind of business as usual. We've got range reviews. We've got if a brewery is interested in ranging with us, they can present their beer. We've got people like so Billy Ryan's our category manager now for craft beer, and Michael Latham's we've called him our local champion. So Michael was one of the key people in actually driving the business to bring local craft into the business. That was a really interesting model actually, where, you know, normally the issue would be, how much stock do I need to be able to supply a distribution center? And the distribution center moves that product into the stores. We established what was a direct store delivery model. So a brewery, so say in instance, you've got some great breweries in Marrickville and quite a number of them now are actually, we work with them. So they would brew their beer, package it like the same day, maybe a day later, get whatever order was up and direct deliver to the store. So from their brewery straight into the fridge.
Yeah, perfect.
So you could walk in as a customer and you'd pick a beer up and out of our store and it's been brewed, or it was packaged probably, 2-3 days ago.
Yeah, nice and fresh.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Great model. And then, you know, sometimes with the longer distribution chains into distribution set, time, you do add time onto it. So time is, I suppose, the enemy of a fresh beer. You know, the older a beer is, the more aged it is. Some beers benefit, but, you know, like a nice IPA, you want it as fresh as possible.
Absolutely, especially with some of the new innovative ones coming on the market, like the hazies and all that. I mean, the shelf life on them is pretty poor from what I've been told.
So. Oh, it is what it is, you know, like, you know, I think the industry kind of had a rule of thumb on 12 months. But, you know, we looked at some of the beers and, you know, we actually went and spoke to the brewers and said, listen, you know, it's 12 months really practical on this, because I think there was this kind of idea that we needed 12 months for our business. And that's not correct. We you know, again, it's back to the customer and making, what can we do to that customer walks into the store, gets the product online, gets it delivered to them, whatever channel that they're working through. They get that product and they drink it and they have a great experience. Mm. If we're going 12 months, because line in the sand, they get the beer, they drink it, and it's 11 months old and it tastes terrible, we've failed. You know, that's not what we're here for. So a number of the breweries now have basically slashed their shelf lives to 6 months. So we'll still get the product in quite fresh, and within six, if it's not sold in 6 months, we get rid of it.
Mm.
So we're guaranteeing to the customer that, you know, preferably I'd want to drink a beer that's a couple of weeks old to a six-month-old beer, but still a six-month-old beer with somebody styles and well cared for and still tastes quite nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there's different sort of ways that they can chuck a label on the shelf life of a beer. There's the best before date, and then there's also just when it was batched or packaged.
Yes. So the gold standard is, so legally must have best before, because if the product's got less than 2 year shelf life, food standards code legislation says it must have a best before date on the product. And, you know, from a customer perspective, if you just tell them when it was packaged, you can work it out, but Can you know when not to drink it by? You know, so I think the best before date really is the brewer taking the responsibility to ensure that the customer is going to have a good experience with the product, and telling them once it passes that date, forget about it. It's not how I would want to drink it, and that's not how I'd like you to drink it.
Mm.
The packed on date's really good then, because then you can actually then calculate how old the beer is.
Get an idea.
Yeah. Because then if you go up against, a brewery that's pasteurized their beer and it's really quite shelf stable, it's not hop driven, right? And they've got a 12-month shelf life, and then you've got a beer that's 6 months shelf life with only the best before, even though, you know, your beer might be a month old and their beer might be, you know, 5 months old, your beer is always going to look like it's the older beer.
Yeah.
It's going to hit its best before date sooner.
Mm.
So the packed on date and the best before date together, like that to us is the gold standard. There's quite a number of breweries now that have adopted that standard for their packs. And it's great for customers because they know how fresh the beer is. It's great for our teams because they know when to stop selling the beer as well. So we'll then, you know, we'll be doing our stock rotation, see the beer that's passing, we'll know if we need to get rid of it. And again, back to customer has a great experience with the product.
Yeah.
What we're looking for with breweries is really, you know, it's a partnership. So I think if the breweries are keen on, you know, they're proud of the product they make, they've got a reputation, they have a drive to make great tasting beer, and they want to share that beer in that, you know, the beers that they produce with the public. Yeah, we want to facilitate that.
Mm.
I think the challenge for breweries is mistakes happen. I think the analogy I use, it's like a supply chain's a river. It flows generally one direction. So from the mountain to the ocean, we're positioned at the ocean. We're pretty much at the final end of the river to where the customer gets the product. If anything happens upstream, the river gets contaminated, it does flow into the ocean. And that's where we'll pick it up. Our job as a QA manager is to keep the river clean. And that's why you got QA quality all the way through the supply chain as well. You'll have QA managers working in breweries, in supply chains, and retail.
Mm.
But, so mistakes happen. We work on fixing them. We continuous improvement mindset. We work with the suppliers and understanding what the issue was, how to fix it, and get the corrective actions in place that we're not seeing the same issue again.
Mm.
I think the challenge would be then if there's brewers that, you know, don't care for that, thinks, you know, that she'll be right, it's not really an issue. I think that's the, you know, they're the brewers that, you know, we probably have to question whether we work with them or not. But, you know, Suffice to say, I really don't think that's much of an issue really with our suppliers. The ones we work with are quite committed to quality. If issues have happened, they've been very responsive on getting them fixed. You walk into any of our stores today and we've got a great selection and, you know, some great beers.
Yeah, no, I've mentioned on the podcast a few times already, like one of my local bottle stores is BWS.
Yep.
And it was only probably late last year I started noticing how many new breweries or craft beers started popping up. Yeah. And even the deal of, you know, a mixed 8-pack, you know, yeah, get 20-30% off. It felt like I had to go all the way into the inner west to a boutique bottle store to sort of have that type of experience. Yeah. And now I can get it 5 minutes down the road. But we've mentioned about quality being of high importance.
Yeah.
For what Endeavour look for in terms of bringing on new beer brands. But what would you say are also some infrastructure things that a brewery needs to have? Like, we've got a lot of small microbreweries opening up, brew pubs starting to dip their toes into wholesale. Is there any sort of, you know, minimums that you sort of look for in volume and production output?
No. And I think that's back to the direct-to-store model. You could have a local brewery in an area that's, you know, could service, you know, within a, say, a 10-kilometer radius from its brewery, maybe 4 BWSs, or and BWS is probably the one you'd start with, because Dan's obviously is it's a bigger destination for a shopper, and a wider range and higher, you know, that's the bigger volumes that we'd see going into the business. But, you know, from a BWS perspective, you know, BWS is like your local convenience.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's always attached to your local butcher, your local Woolies, your local hairdresser. It's sort of like you said, and that's really interesting insights, because I always had this impression, and it's probably like you said, the change in the model, that it seems like any local brewery, as long as you've got high standards around quality and some sort of minimum infrastructure things in place, sounds like anyone can feature in a BWS store.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the challenge, obviously, from a store perspective is that they don't have rubber walls, so space is there's always an element of space and what we can and can't, you know, how much we can range. But and that's kind of where, you know, we've been working for the last couple of years, really, is that drive then to actually get local product into stores. And it's been very successful. Like, I think if you go to Marrickville Metro as an example, pretty much every craft brewery within that Marrickville craft hub area is featured in that store.
Mm.
And those breweries are delivering that beer directly fresh into that store. So that model just basically is replicated right around the country.
Mm.
So, you know, you go down to Hobart, similar situation, some really good Tassie beers in some of the BWSs there and in the two Dans, actually. Yeah, but at the end of the day, I think if you're talking, you know, what's needed from a brewery's perspective, that care for the product. So, you know, you got to care for the product. You got to be, you got to be on your toes to how it tastes with the customer. So there's a couple of things, you know, just, you know, that would come to mind that I'd probably say, yeah, these are good things to have. Know your process, okay? So brewing doesn't change much. When you set your process, you got a recipe, you follow the recipe, you get your outcome. And if you follow it correctly each time, and the process is the same, you control your variables, you should be able to get a consistent, high-quality beer out of that process every time. And that includes then also the packaging. So you know your parameters around what you're checking for your packaging to ensure that the seams correctly, you know, sealed, etc. And then, you know, bringing back again to the brewery, there's a couple of things. Yeah, I'd say from a food safety quality perspective, look into setting up a HACCP program. So hazard analysis and critical control point. That's pretty much been able to, I suppose, map out the entire end-to-end process, recognizing what's coming in and what's coming out, and setting up some critical control points for your food safety. So where are the critical areas that we could have a failure that would actually result in an unsafe product? So an example would be maybe your filler with caustic wash. So you do a caustic wash on your filler. How do you ensure then once that filler kicks off again, that there's no residual caustic remaining, that's going to go into your can.
Yeah.
Then you'd also have your QCP, so your quality control points. So then you're just recognizing all the key areas through your process where a quality issue may occur. So if you've got that in control, and that's really, you know, it's process mapping, it's monitoring and then keeping your records, that'll be invaluable to you. So there's a bit of work to that. And it's not, you know, from coming from being a home brewer to getting down into that kind of level of, I suppose, that discipline and, you know, having to really put that much effort in, that can be a challenge for a newbie. But the outcome there is the consistent, high quality product you will be able to get. And then also the ability to know if an issue is occurring, that you can act on it there and then. Because the last thing you want is, right, I look back in my records, I've just had a withdrawal, there it was there. So if you're monitoring and you check that it's now out of, something's out of sync, you can act on it there. You don't want a situation where I've got to give you a call and say, listen, unfortunately, we've got an issue with your product and we've got to take it off shelf. Because it's, you know, it's not something we want to do. But again, like I said, it's all about customer. So customer, we know there's an issue. Customer's not going to have a good experience with the product. We will not sell them that product.
Yeah.
That is our reputation and that's our promise to our customers. Customers can come into our store and know that they're going to spend $15 on a can of beer and not have to cross their fingers. So that is, yeah, that's what we're about.
Mm. You mentioned, well, we've spoken a bit about some of the common faults you see, and obviously packaging seems to be one of them, leaking cans and product. But Dan, or VB, he's spoken about some issues in the industry with re-fermentation in products. Yeah. I think the correct term is diastaticus.
Well,
one of those things where things re-ferment.
We're looking at what's be called a secondary fermentation.
Right.
So obviously you've got your primary fermentation with your yeast, or you know, you might use a bacteria in certain circumstances. But with the primary fermentation, that's really you're converting your sugars into alcohol and carbon dioxide. At the end of the fermentation, it's shut down. It's, you know, you prep your beer for, you know, conditioning, bright beer, and then package. If there is microbial contamination in that product and a food source that is either readily available, like sugar, or if it's a particular, you know, you mentioned diastaticus, where it's got the capability to actually access unfermentable sugars and basically convert them into fermentable sugars, then there's that food source available. That thing, if there's residual Saccharomyces cerevisiae, so brewer's yeast, then a secondary fermentation can occur. And it can be quite dangerous. So what you're looking at is, again, the buildup of alcohol. So your alcohol by volume statement on your product will be incorrect.
Yep.
And the other element sent out is carbon dioxide. So you will actually have a buildup of internal pressure in that package. And unfortunately, then what we've seen is these packages rupture and you get an exploding can. So that's something that's, you know, it's one issue that I'm quite aware of. And it's something we've worked very hard with the breweries and the industries to build the awareness and actually work with them on some of the key, I think, controls that they should be working on to ensure that they don't get that issue. Okay, so some of the key controls. It's not every brewer's ability. You know, finance is an issue sometimes, and, you know, and a lot of times as well, it's more in, I suppose, that perception of what it can do to the product. But pasteurization is probably one of the best controls. You're talking about a process where it actually goes and kills the living organisms that may still be present in the product. You've got a product there that's stable. Other ways, sterile filtration. So they'd be one of two key mechanisms. But then it's, you know, ensuring that you've got the attenuation levels down. So you've ensured that fermentable sugars have been exhausted. So there's no food available, and good micro control. So if you were testing and doing your ATP testing to ensure that there's nothing live in the product, and, you know, you've got some good assurity that the product you're putting out to market is safe. Positive release process would be good. So when you finish packaging, do your micro testing, however long it takes. While you're waiting for the results, the product doesn't leave your brewery. The test comes back okay, then let it go. So you don't want to be doing it and then going, now I've got an issue because once it's in trade, there's nothing else you can do from there. You put in your reputation at risk. I think you're putting the industry at risk, and most importantly, you're putting the customer at risk and our store team members as well, because they've, you know, there's other people that have to actually handle that product, either put it on the shelf or to purchase it. And the last thing you want is that person picking the product up and it blowing up in their hands. Yeah, like if it's a glass bottle, it could, you know, you could, worst case scenario, you could be looking at an eye injury, a rupture can, you know, you could be looking at stitches on your hand. So it's just, yeah, it's not good. And I think that's something that's a pitfall for new players that I've seen happen. But we've done a lot of work with the industry. The IBA has done a lot of work with the members, and we have seen a significant drop off for that issue. And I look at other markets like the US, where it just seems it's a bit more prevalent. But, you know, it's never to say that we've addressed the issue's been addressed forever. It'll always be a risk because of just the nature of how it occurs. But I think having those kind of those key elements in place, like your holdback, your monitoring, your stabilization, will help.
Yeah. Well, you're also seeing a lot of craft breweries trying to be innovative with some of their beer styles, where they chuck anything and everything. You know, they're either heavily late dry hopping or chucking fruit puree, God knows what. You're seeing those sort of adjuncts re-fermenting late in the product.
And I think then all you need to do is jump on the you know, food standards website and look at the most. Let's look at the last 12 months and the recalls we've had. And, you know, if it's a beer, generally the beer's been recalled because of the secondary fermentation, specifically because there's a risk that the product will, the package will rupture through the buildup of the CO2, but also because the alcohol by volume is now out of spec. Because you got to, from a food standards perspective, your alcohol, so that you're given a plus or minus 0.3 from what you stayed on the package.
Yeah.
So once you breach that, you basically, you've got an illegal product.
Well, there's some great takeaways there, especially around quality. And I'm sure a lot of people listening have aspirations, myself included, starting maybe small in a brew pub type model with some aspirations of some local wholesale distribution. You know what I mean? And it's really interesting to know, especially BWS's, you know, that local model, and that any BWS that you find around the country seems to just embrace any local brewery as long as they're willing to sort of come to the table with what we've talked about
today.
But moving on to some industry insights, Diarmid, there has been some interesting news that's come out recently. I think Brews News were the ones that leaked it, but it was around this the Queensland Health District survey on a number of breweries, especially in that southeast Queensland region. A number of beers in that area were sampled, tested, and had come back to be ABV non-compliant. So some that were even over a full 1% over the stated amount on the label. Are you able to talk to us a bit about Endeavour's response to that?
Okay, so our position would be if a product doesn't meet the labeling requirements of the Food Standards Code, we won't sell it. So if we become aware of a product that breaches any of the requirements, it does get withdrawn. So, you know, it's not just a case of, you know, ABV. It could be the label might have the wrong ABV on the product, or sorry, for the beer. Standard drinks might be incorrect. Volume might be correct. We would actually pull that product and get it relabeled. So in these instances, if we do pick up on product that breaches it, that product would be taken off shelf. And depending on, then we'd have to assess the issue. Is it because it's a secondary fermentation? Secondary fermentation, obviously, it's not going to go back on shelf. But if it's a situation where it's potentially the product had just the incorrect ABV, we'd have to get it relabeled and update the standard drinks. We will need to, we'd be looking into that ourselves now. So I won't get into the detail on what we're doing there, but definitely we take reports like that very seriously. We take our responsibility to our customers to ensure we provide a safe and high quality product very seriously, and that we provide a product that's legally fit for sale very seriously. So on that front, I think there's a bit more work that we'll be doing on our end, just to get an idea on, just on this, because I think I haven't seen the report. yeah, we'll be doing our own investigating there at the moment.
Because these beers were purchased directly from the brewery themselves. They weren't sort of found in bottle stores or anything like that.
No, I haven't seen the report, so I don't know where what breweries are involved. I don't know where the points of purchase were.
Yeah,
I think it's something that you can't ignore. You know, they've done their testing. I think we just need to. We'll be doing our own verification on that.
Yeah.
And if we do find any breweries that obviously have a breach in that in for ABV, we will need to engage with them, and we'd have to then withdraw the product from sale and then determine what happens with that product and why it's breached ABV.
Mm.
I think it's a situation where it is paramount that whatever you say on the label is correct. You know, it's not just about, you know, saying it's 4.5% and she'll be right if it's 5.5. No, it's got to come down to a level of pride and professionalism in what you do to actually hit your specifications. I think it's a testament to the skill of the brewer to be able to know what the ABV target is and to hit it. Never would you see like a larger brewery release a product that doesn't meet their quality specifications. And there's no way that they can't be, that kind of mindset doesn't apply to a smaller producer.
Mm.
It absolutely does.
Absolutely, yeah.
And come back again to, you know, you're a smaller producer, might not have the same level of resource, doesn't matter. You're selling a product, it's your reputation, there's legal requirements. All of this must be met.
Mm.
If you can't do that, then don't get into the industry because it's a non-negotiable requirement. You've got to be able to meet all those requirements. That's as much as I can say.
If you want to play in that big space with major distributors and bottle shops like the Endeavour Drinks Group, I guess whether you're small or large, you've got to be hitting what we're talking about today.
Absolutely. Yeah. And ABV, you know, it's probably the key parameter that you just can't, you gotta hit. Like you might have your specification, you might have a specification for bitterness and color, you might breach your own specification on that, but you taste the beer, it's your beer, fine, let it through.
Mm.
There's no legal requirement on you said it was this and I think the key thing is as well, like you got to bring it back to, you know, false and misleading information. So accepting that there's a food standards requirement on it, there's also an ACCC angle to it, that if you tell a customer it is this, it must be that.
No, it's something I've taken a massive takeaway from this podcast. I think it was Steve Hendo that brought it up first, where he talked about, you know, you're essentially a food manufacturer.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if someone's coming into your brewery or buying something off a bottle shop shelf and they're thinking that only, you know, if I have two of them, I'm all right to drive. And the legal ramifications, I don't think it doesn't hit home for home brewers. It didn't really hit home for me when I first started this podcast. I've learned so many things that I need to be thinking about in a commercial sense and also in a legal sense of being a beer producer. But I don't think it's really thought about with these backyard brewers making the jump into the commercial space. Hopefully this podcast and a lot of things like the IBA are sort of trying to drive home.
Absolutely.
But it's definitely a big educating thing, especially for new breweries to the market. So
yeah,
just one other industry trend. Because you're right across all the different categories, always like to get a guest insight on where they see the next trends are moving, or maybe if you just want to provide some comments on the craft beer spaces, of what you see the future outlook of it.
So not an expert in this space.
Well, maybe not just craft beer, but maybe where you see the future of the alcohol beverage market.
Well, premiumization is definitely a factor. I think you and people really looking after themselves. So we're actually seeing a continued trend of people, the nation consuming less alcohol, which is a great, great thing to see. People are drinking more responsibly, looking after themselves. Endeavour Group, we're a drinks business. So we don't just sell alcoholic beverages, we sell beverages.
Yeah.
So if you want to drink for whatever occasion, whatever, you know, if you might like a non-alcoholic beer, we've got it. So I think, you know, from a trend perspective, we're seeing people drinking less but still spending about the same. So they're actually then saying, oh, I'm not going to drink that much. So they've reduced the volume, but now still got a, you know, this is my budget for the week. So they're actually buying products that are more premium. And that's what's driving a lot of the craft beer. So, you know, the guy that would have bought maybe a case for the week might now only buy like a multi-pack. But probably, you know, from value perspective, they're probably paying about something similar. So what I would have paid for a case, I'm now getting for, you know, I'm now getting my six-pack. I'm drinking less, drinking better. You know, I'm drinking a really high-quality product and I'm loving it. The other ones would be seen as, you know, the non-alcoholic category growing. So there's a lot of, so we're seeing a lot of new beers come in that are non-alc beers. So they're really, some of them are quite good actually, that they taste like a beer. You know, you got some really good styles like your IPAs, your pale ales, your amber ales, your porters. So I had a tasting session last week and quite a number of them were really quite good. I think there's some opportunity with a few of the other ones as well. They just need to be able to deliver on that. But there's certainly breweries out there that are actually starting to make some really good non-alc beers. Other I suppose trend as well, the seltzers. So we've seen seltzers step into the market from the US. There's actually a number of breweries now within the Australian market that are actually they're producing their own seltzers. I think that's kind of, you know, a trend as well around that healthier, you know, I don't want as much sugar. So these products are pretty much, you know, flavored water with, you know, alcohol. So there's less calories to it. So, you know, again, that's something I see that's kind of that's been on the rise. From a personal view, it's not my preference. I'm not sure if it's going to continue or if it's something that's, you know, be a fad and maybe in a couple of years' time something else will come in.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're the ones we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, no, it's seltzers has been talked about many, many times in this podcast and listening to some American podcasts talk about the hard kombucha market as well. So kombucha being well-known over here now, but I can't say I've seen any alcoholic versions over here, have you?
Yeah, no, there's Dirty Butcher's an example. Okay. So there's a few in the market. You know, kombucha's definitely been there's been a big drive there just from the health trend, but obviously then, you know, there was an opportunity seen with some of the producers to get an alcoholic version in. So that has happened. So, yeah, I'm not seeing that, you know, there's been a major, I suppose, uptake on it, but it's definitely a category that's grown for us. I think the, you know, kombucha's learned had some similar issues to the craft brewers as well. There's a couple of recalls there with some of the kombucha products because of secondary fermentation and breaching alcohol and packaging explosions as well. So, you know, it's not just, these issues aren't confined to just the craft beer industry.
Yeah. Now, not just particularly Endeavour, but I guess some of the major distributors have somewhat been applauded during the COVID period of trying to help out some of the small suppliers, especially craft breweries or craft beverage brands.
Yeah.
Well, helping out with payment term turnaround and also volume, making sure they're ordering the similar volumes during that difficult period.
Yeah.
Are you able to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, when COVID obviously hit, there were lockdowns, and those lockdowns impacted a lot of people within the industry, particularly the businesses that were quite linked to the on-premise. So when pubs, hotels got shut, then, you know, that revenue stream suddenly dried up for them. There was we did see then an increase then in foot traffic into stores in replacement of not being able to get a product, you know, get your beer from the hotel. You got it from your bottle shop. So that was, you know, it was kind of a benefit for us. But what we, you know, certainly then we were concerned about what the impact then was to our suppliers. And like I said, with the industry, it has to be united. There's no point. It can't be a win-lose scenario. It has to be a win-win. So there was a couple of things that we looked at with the suppliers. We went in and talked. We basically had a bit of a call to arms internally then went out and actually talked to each of the industry bodies on what our plan was for it to help the suppliers within each of the industry bodies. So you're talking like the Australia Grape and Wine, the Independent Brewers Association, Cider Australia, and the Australian Spirits as an example. And what we looked at was payment terms. So, you know, we had a threshold for revenue. So if that business was at that level, then we were reducing our payment terms firm. So instead of getting paid, say, like 60 days or, you know, 45, I think it came down to about 30 or less. So, you know, we basically helped ensure that they're getting access to cash sooner. And we went on a drive as well to get a lot more products into the business. And to, you know, if we had in the space in Dan's, we were looking at how we would get them onto our Endeavor Marketplace website and really driving the sales for these guys to actually, you've no longer got the channel to sell it into a pub, but we know customers still want to have a drink. So they're looking to buy from a retailer. So we are that retailer that a lot of customers then went to. We then ensure that the products that they would get in the pub are the products that, you know, they might not have seen before, but these are smaller suppliers that are getting heavily impacted. They're now available to them. And we've had some very good feedback from the industry on that. And a lot of suppliers, you know, basically it meant the world to them. So it's quite touching to actually work for an industry and work for a company that really does care. So, it was certainly a proud day for me to be part of that, part of the business.
Yeah, no, it was really interesting to see, because I know at the beginning of this podcast had some of the brewers that I went out to in the US talk a bit about, especially on a pub level, you know, the payment turnaround for kegs can be quite excruciating for some of these smaller businesses because, yeah. You know, a lot of them are a big organization, some of these pubs, obviously part of the ALH group. And, yeah, a lot of them have commented on how good, I guess, the group was when it came to payment terms and helped them out because and you still ordered the same sort of volumes and helped them out with that. And so it was really good to see the industry pull together like that. So and like you said, it's everyone sort of needs to be united or one part falls down and everyone else suffers, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we've had a couple of calamities, you know, the wine industry then getting hit by bushfires.
Yes.
You know, I think we came out of that summer where, you know, half the vineyards in Adelaide Hills had been burnt, you know. So we did a lot of work then with wineries there and what juice we could buy. And then, you know, we're helping to bring in products that, you know, some of the distilleries started working with grape growers to, you know, produce to actually utilize those smoke taint affected grapes.
Yeah, well, I had James Harves from Yulee's Brews on, and they did a very interesting hybrid beer wine. I don't know if you heard about it, but I can't remember. I think it might have been out of Mudgee where the grapes came from, but they were all smoked affected.
Yeah.
And they basically bought a whole heap off them and created some seasonal wine. It was amazing what they did.
And I think, you know, and that's a great example where, you know, again, the industry's helping the industry.
Mm.
It's not just, you know, that's a brewer stepping in to help a winemaker. So, you know, I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's testament to, you know, where people's, I suppose, mindset is and how they want to engage within the industry when they're a part of it. And, you know, I think my role, again, as quality manager is pretty much how I engage with the suppliers, with the industry to ensure that they're making a great product. If they're making a great product, we can sell a great product. And so it continues. If they don't make a great product, it can end the relationship, and then it doesn't benefit. So I think, you know, I mean, you know, if you got a local brewer who's making great product, we're able to sell it. You know, that's helping that locality, because you got an employer, they've got people working for them, and you know, it's just the circle of life continues.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Well, really appreciate your time, Diarmaid. And I've mentioned a couple of times some great insights there on what new breweries can consider, even established ones, looking at, you know, dipping their toes in the wholesale distribution market, especially in their local area. Any closing thoughts and advice you'd like to part ways with?
I think nothing that I haven't mentioned already. I think just to, you know, recap that it is a united approach, that it's a partnership between, you look at the entire value chain. It is the grain growers, the hop growers, the guys looking after your yeast. They're doing it well. Then the brewery gets the ingredients to make a really great beer and they care for it and they're on top of that. Then it's working well with a supply chain. Then it's working well with the retailer. Customers will get a great product. And as long as we maintain that, then, you know, the industry is healthy. If the industry gets into a situation where we, I suppose, get lazy, we kind of drop it from our side or somewhere else, that can have a detrimental effect. I think it's been an amazing journey to watch the growth of craft beer in Australia. So when I arrived in, back to my time in Ireland, I think when I started, it was maybe three craft breweries in Ireland. It was one in Cork, one in Carlow, and one in Dublin. And, you know, I think now there's probably over 100, which is amazing. And some of the guys are making great beer. And it's a great industry. You know, the connection people have with their local brewery now, you know, some of these places, they become real community hubs.
Yeah.
Where I live in the Inner West, there's my local brewery. It's Wayward.
Yeah, you're spoiled for choice. Yeah.
But you get there and you got your dogs and, you know, you meet some of the local characters and you have a chat and you share a beer. You know, what I don't know. That's the kind of industry that, you know, I'm proud to be part of. So I think anything that helps ensure there's longevity there, that we support it, I'm proud to be part of that. And I think anybody that's part of that should be proud of that too and really make the effort to ensure that the product that they make is the best product they can make.
Mm-hmm.
And they put the care and they know it's good. And they're working hard to make sure they do that every time. And if a day comes where they make a beer and it's not fit for market, they don't release it. They take it on the chin and start again. Mm-hmm. Make another beer, make sure it's right, send it out. I think the idea of, you know, sending out sub-quality product into the market, it's just not, it's not good for the brewery, it's not good for the industry, and it's not good for the customer.
Yep.
So you need to be on your toes. If you don't know, ask. There is support in the industry. There's a lot of great people that just want to, they will give you the time, they will give you the knowledge, they will share it with you, often just for free. You ring them up, meet them for a beer, have a chat. Tell them some of the concerns you've got, the problems you're encountering. They'll help you. And like I said, any of the help we've given to our suppliers, we're not charging. We're doing it for the simple sake of helping them be better brewers than they are yesterday. That for the future, they just keep improving.
Yeah, well, perfect parting advice there, Diarmuid. And anything you'd like to mention or plug from an Endeavour perspective, services, product launches, events coming up?
No.
Is that more of a commercial marketing question?
It is. It's like when it's happening, I get told about it and they go, yeah, this is a good one. Yeah, come around.
No.
My lens is, you know, product quality.
And that's exactly why I wanted to have you on. I know it's beer distribution and I guess you're the man and your team are the ones that control what's going out there in terms of a quality perspective.
Yep.
So another great episode to add to I guess what breweries need to know on that commercial level. So once again, Diarmuid, I really appreciate you coming on the Build Me Brewery podcast.
Thank you very much. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. That was part two of the beer distribution segment. Part three of the segment, I chat with Brian Sorkia from Ready Set China, who is an import distributor of Australian and international beverage brands into mainland China, and provides some amazing insights on how breweries can tap into the growing Chinese craft beer market. As always, if you are liking the podcast so far and find the content useful, please give us a follow and rating on whatever platform you're listening on. Also, follow us on all our social media handles, as well as visiting our website, www.buildmeabrewery.com.au. I'll also mention to listeners that we now have a new Build Me a Brewery discussion group linked to our Facebook page. Now, this is a group of keen listeners and like-minded people discussing their brewery build plans and providing advice to others on the subject. Link to this group will be in the episode show notes. Once again, I'm Chris Hayton, your host, and this is the Build Me a Brewery podcast.